You're listening to The Power of the Human Spirit on TalkZone.com. Let's get back to your host, best-selling author and nationally recognized speaker, Paul J. Wedding.
All right, welcome back. We're on with Bud Welch. Bud is without a doubt one of my most favorite people to talk to. I just absolutely love the guy. You know, Bud, Terry Nichols was spared the death penalty, and he had a state trial that took place in Oklahoma City. Now, there was also a third conspirator. I'm not 100% sure his name.
Michael Fortier.
Michael Fortier.
Yes.
Can you tell us about the state trial of Terry Nichols and the role that you played in that? And finally, is Michael still incarcerated?
No. Michael Fortier was released about 3 years ago, and he is in the Federal Witness Protection Program. So I have no clue what his name is or where he's living.
Okay. Yeah. So can you tell us about the state trial of Mr. Nichols, and did you play a role in that? And
what had happened was the district attorney here in Oklahoma County, a guy by the name of Bob Macy at that mm-hmm. time. He's no longer district attorney. We called him Cowboy Bob Macy because he wore the Western string tie.
Yeah.
And he was a former police officer, and he went to law school and became district attorney, and he liked putting notches in his pistol by getting death penalty for as many as he possibly could. And since he put several on death row, we've actually had 8 wrongful convictions in Oklahoma, and 4 of them belong to Bob Macy in Oklahoma County, guys that were exonerated innocent. What happened in the Nichols and McVeigh case was Bob Macy said if they didn't get the death penalty in the federal case, he'd bring them back to Oklahoma and try them and get the death penalty for them. So that took place in May of 2004. And the trial was held in, it was actually a change of venue from Oklahoma City to McAllister. McAllister is actually where our killing house is. We have a large prison in McAllister.
Okay.
And I was pleased when I heard that the change of venue was going to be from Oklahoma City to McAllister, because in my travels, in going around cities where the killing house is located, I found people that live in those communities, a lot of them are ashamed of the death penalty. And I thought there's a better chance of getting a jury out of that community that 12 people would not vote for the death penalty, and it takes 12-0 to get the death penalty. And
right.
I went and testified in the sentence. They found him guilty, of course. And then I testified in the sentencing phase on his behalf, and 5 other family members did as well. And the jury came back 8-4 for the death penalty, and, of course, all that did is give him life without parole, which he already had, and we spent $18 million in the state of Oklahoma trying to get the death penalty for him and failed. And so he's now back in federal prison, Supermax in Florence, Colorado. And after all of his legal stuff was over with, he wrote a complete confession and letter. And actually, several of the family members have been corresponding with him mm-hmm. and being able to get healing through that correspondence. And so, of course, ironically, the decision came from the jury on June the 11th, 2004, the third anniversary of McVeigh's execution.
Oh, jeez.
So it's kind of a lot of coincidences going on here with Waco, April 19th of 93, and Oklahoma City, April 19th of 95, and a lot of common dates there.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of ugliness that is tied to that date, April 19th, as
yes,
well.
Yes, and I've run across a number of people in traveling and speaking, people coming to me and saying, my birthday is April 19th, you know. So... I had been traveling a lot speaking, and I received a phone call in June of 98. This is 38 months after the bombing. And from a nun from Attica Prison, not far from Buffalo, New York. And the purpose of her call was to ask me to come to the Buffalo Niagara Falls area to speak against the death penalty. I had been in Syracuse in April 2 months earlier. And that's how she got my name and telephone number. And we had an hour-long conversation. And I told her about an incident that happened about two or three weeks after the bombing, I saw Bill McVeigh on television, Tim's father. And I remember when the soundbite came on that he was going to be on after the series of commercials, my thought was, I don't want to see this. I just simply don't want to see it. And I, however, I didn't change the channel or leave the room. And I sat and I watched Bill being interviewed. He was standing in front of his house. He lives out north of Buffalo, New York. Mm-hmm. And the reporter was asking him questions. Bill was kind of stooped over a flower bed, maybe like he's pulling weeds from it. There's a television camera off to his right shoulder, and Bill never would look at the camera. I don't recall any of the questions that reporter asked him that day or any answers that Bill gave. But on his final answer, he turned to his right and looked directly into the lens of the television camera for a couple of seconds. And when he did that, I could see this kind of a large man physically stooped in grief. And he had a deep pain in his eye that I recognized immediately because I was living that same pain at that same moment. And bear in mind, this is during the period of time that I didn't even want a trial for his son. This was,
right.
was in the first month. And so I told the nun from Attica about seeing Bill McVeigh and how I had often thought of his well-being. When I saw him that time on television, I knew that someday I needed to go tell that man that I truly cared how he felt and did not blame him or his family for what his son had done. And when I told her that, she said that a meeting needs to be arranged between the two of them. I committed to going to Buffalo the first week of September. And she called me about 5 or 6 weeks later, and she had informed me that a meeting had been arranged and that I'd be meeting with Bill the 6th day I was in the Buffalo area, a Saturday morning, at 10 a.m., she said, at his house. And she said, I will take you. Well, the meeting at the house did not sound that good because I somehow didn't think I wanted to meet Tim's father in the house that he had once lived in. Bill and his wife, Mickey, had divorced a couple of years earlier. Tim had lived with his dad while he was in high school. And nonetheless, I went and spoke for 5 days in the Buffalo area. And on Friday night at Canisius College, a Jesuit school near downtown Buffalo, after I spoke, there were two men that came forward and introduced themselves. One of them had worked with Bill at General Motors, and the other was a neighbor. Well, they had no idea I was going the next morning to see him. So I went to quizzing them about his personality. I learned from them that Bill was shy. He didn't talk much, but his hobby was growing a very large garden in his backyard each summer. He lived on about 2 acres of land, and he'd grow a very large garden. So the next morning, the nun took me to his house about 20 miles outside of Buffalo. And when I knocked on his door and introduced myself, I said to him, I said, Bill, I understand you have a nice garden in your backyard. This man didn't look the least bit shy at that moment. He got a big smile on his face. And he said, would you like to see it? I knew when we were walking through his garage to his backyard that we would find common ground. We spent about 30 minutes out there getting to know one another. Then he invited me into the house. And we sat around the kitchen table for about an hour and a half talking. And I had noticed photos on the wall. The biggest photo on the wall above my shoulder, above the kitchen table, was an 8x10 of Tim. And I kept glancing at that photo during this conversation. I didn't look at it with any type of malice or anger. I just looked at it more with a question, not understanding why he had killed Julie. And I caught myself looking too many times and felt the need to make a comment. So I looked another time, and all I said was, God, what a good-looking kid. There was utter silence fell in that kitchen. And I looked across the table. I had met Tim's younger sister, Jennifer. She was there. And I looked across the table at her, and she dropped her eyes to the table, didn't say a word. Bill had done the same thing. Earlier when we were in Bill's garden, he said to me, he said, Bud, can you cry? And I thought, why is he asking this question? And I said, well, yeah, Bill, I can. And I usually don't have much trouble doing so. He said, all of my adult life I've been unable to cry. He said, my father was much the same way. He said, I've had a lot to cry about the last 3.5 years, and I just can't do it. Well, after the silence ended at that kitchen table, Bill looked up at the wall and pointed at the photo, and he just very simply said, that's Tim's high school graduation picture. But when he did that, there was this great big tear that rolled out of Bill's right eye down his cheek. And I could see at that moment that this father could cry for his son. At that moment, Tim was in prison in Florence, Colorado, had been sentenced to death. This was in September of 98. And, you know, I think you're going to love your children more the more they need you. And at that moment, Bill knew that Tim needed him desperately, but also knew there was nothing that he could do for him. We continued talking a few minutes, and I got up from the table to leave. I shook Bill's hand, and I offered my hand to Jennifer, as I had when we met a couple of hours earlier. She didn't take my hand. She hugged me around the neck. And we both went to crying, and I felt kind of trapped, not knowing what to do next. And so finally I just took her face in my hands, in the palm of my hands, and I said to her, I said, look, honey, the three of us are in this for the rest of our lives. We can make the most of this as we choose. I don't want your brother to die, and I'll do everything that I can to prevent it. And then I hugged her one more time. I left the house and they left a rental car for me to drive back into Buffalo. And I remember crying all the way back, and I arrived at Hope House, a halfway house for released prisoners. Sister Karen had started it and had been running it for a number of years. And I met the nun from Attica Prison, and I sat in the living room with those two nuns still crying. And when I finally went through that process, all of a sudden it was like this tremendous weight had been removed from my shoulders. And I've never felt closer to God than I did at that moment. I think what happened to me that Saturday morning in Western New York is I met a bigger victim of the Oklahoma City bombing than myself. And I say that in spite of the fact I no longer have Julie. I traveled all over the world speaking about Julie, bragging on her, telling wonderful stories about her. I don't have to tell you the other things that she did that weren't so wonderful. And she did her share of those as well. And I in a sense, can keep her alive, just like I'm talking about here right at this moment. And Bill McVeigh is never permitted to say anything wonderful. Oh, my dog. Is able to say anything wonderful about Tim. And I'm sure Tim did a lot of wonderful things when he was a kid growing up. And, you know, at 7 a.m. on June the 11th, 2001, Bill McVeigh and I had one thing in common. We had both buried our children. They died in very different ways, but we had both buried our children. My mother died 3 years ago, and I miss Mom a lot. She was in her 90s. And when your parents die, you go to the hilltop and you bury them. When your children die, you bury them in your heart. And it's forever. It never goes away. Right. Bill McVeigh has the same thing that I have. He buried his child.
That's incredible. Absolutely, absolutely incredible, Bud. We're coming up to, we got about 4 minutes, Bud. So I get the other thing, as far as a memorial, is there a date and time where the victims of this tragedy are honored?
Yes, every April the 19th.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's there's a ceremony at where the building was at.
That's correct. And, well, there's a big memorial there. The memorial covers covers almost two square blocks.
Okay.
And there's there are chairs that have a glass base. Mm-hmm. And there's a light inside of them that's on each night, and they have a tall bronze back to them. And each chair weighs, like 260 pounds, something like that. And there's 168 chairs. And there's two sizes of chairs. There's the regular size, and then there's 19 small chairs for the little children that were killed. There was two children killed in the Social Security waiting room that were there with the grandparents. And on the second floor above Social Security was a daycare center. And there were 17 little children killed in that daycare center. And,
now, with the last couple of minutes here, I know that you're part of the Forgiveness Project. Is there anything else that you're involved with?
Well, I'm the president of Murder Victims Families for Human Rights. In fact, I just came from a board meeting last weekend in Boston. And we're headquartered in Cambridge, Massachusetts. In fact, we're on Mass Avenue, about a mile from Harvard Square. And I'm also on the board of directors of the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, which is headquartered in Washington, D.C. And I'm on the board of directors of the Crime Victims for a Just Society. It's based in Mason, Michigan. And I think it's pretty much funded through, I think, Michigan State University, I believe.
Well, it sounds like you're keeping yourself busy.
And I'm also on the board of directors of the Oklahoma Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. So I sometimes get bored with board meetings.
Yeah. If anybody wanted to contact you, Bud, is there a way that they can contact you through a website or anything like that?
I don't have a website, but they can Google Bud Welch and find me.
Yeah, that's for sure. I had no problem that way either.
B-U-D-W-E-L-C-H, and they can white page me and get my phone number.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, Bud, we're up against it. I got to tell you, this conversation has been one that I wanted to have for a long time. I know we talk on the phone every few months, and
yeah, and you've been promising me for a long time I was going to be on the program.
And
I didn't think it was going to happen.
Oh, and we're here, and I hope we stay in contact. I love you, and
thanks.
God bless you, sir.
And let's do it again.
Let's do it, Bud.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This show was produced by Dave Olson. Great job as usual, Dave. I want to thank my guest, Bud Welch. Always a pleasure, Bud. I want to thank the listeners, the emailers as well. Wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you, without you. If you'd like to get a copy of my book, you can go to pauljwedding.com or harmonyparkpress.com. That's H-A-R-M-O-N-I-E. We have a special price for those listening today. Next week, actor and comedian Dave Coulier stops by, talking about his career and some of the projects he's working on. If you missed any part of the show today, you can go to my homepage on TalkZone.com, click on Archives, catch what you missed, or listen to the show in its entirety. You have been listening to The Power of the Human Spirit. I am your host, Paul J. Wedding. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Keep the peace, God bless, and we are out.